Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of August 30th through September 6th. And this week, although we're nearing the end of the summer, we're going to talk a little bit about summer books with Regina Nigro, our assistant literary editor. Welcome, Regina.
Hi.
Now, Regina is, in addition to, of course, being a member of our staff, is kind of an avid follower of book blogs and has a good handle on, you know, what's popular, what's been popular this summer. So we've asked her to come in and give us kind of an update. So, Regina, maybe you can start by, what are the big stories have been this summer in terms of bestsellers and surprise hits, that sort of thing?
Well, the biggest, I think, the hit of the summer is the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. Newsweek has called it the Summer of Salander. The main character of the Dragon Tattoo series is Lisbeth Salander. And it's so true. I mean, this is not even something you have to follow book blogs to to realize. If you just look around on almost every subway I take, there is someone reading The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo or The Girl Who Played with Fire or The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest. Any one of those three books you'll see people reading all over. It's just been just a blockbuster. I mean, it's unusual because it's this series that, I mean, it started... It's a Swedish series, and it's been translated. And actually, the original Swedish title for the first book was Men Who Hate Women. And I thought, wow, I would have loved to be in the meeting with that American publisher. The first words out of their mouths must have been, we have to change that title. We're not going to sell books with that title.
Although that title did stay, I think, in most of Europe. Although I think it changed in Britain and the United States. They changed that title. So... they were still buying it, even with that title.
Well, but I think in America, maybe that would just be Men Who Hate Women. I don't know. I don't see that flying off the shelves.
I would agree. I mean, you've read some of the series. I read the first two books. And yeah. I have to say, you know, I think they're a good read. I have been a little surprised about what a phenomenon it's become, because I think there are other, for example, there was a front page story about this, about like publishers are now looking for Nordic literature because they're trying to find the next Stieg Larsson.
Stieg Larsson. It's interesting. It's sort of like how, you know, Twilight becomes big and then everyone wants to write about vampires. It's just about, okay, this thing was a success and how can we just ride that till the wheels fall off? It's interesting because the thing that makes it a success in the first place is that it's new or it's something different than what's been around. And everyone's like, well, let's just keep copying.
Right.
The new original thing that's just come out.
Although in this case, and I'll make one plug, I think that this has sort of been done before. Like Henning Menkel, who I'm a fan of, Swedish, another Swedish crime writer who, anybody, if you go to an independent bookstore, they said, I want the next Stieg Larsson. They said, well, go back and read Henning Menkel. I think that was out there, yet it wasn't getting the kind of attention that this has. So sometimes, you know, it's, as they say, a perfect storm.
I think that's true. I think that's true. And I wonder, to a certain extent, you know, Stieg Larsson, the sort of myth-making around him giving the manuscripts to his editor and then immediately passing away as soon as he had given the manuscripts, if that has anything to do with it. I know last summer, the big hit of last summer was Infinite Jest. All of a sudden in New York City, even though Infinite Jest was published in 96, David Foster Wallace had passed away that previous fall, and so everyone was reading Infinite Jest. It was Infinite Summer in New York City.
No, I think you're right. And I think another part is the character of Lisbeth Salander, who I think really is unique and very different. So I think that is another big explanation for the popularity. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other books out there?
Well, one of the ones that I read this summer that came out July 5th is called Death Is Not an Option by Suzanne Rivecka. It's actually a debut collection of short stories. And I'm a book review editor, so normally I do not trust book blurbs. I think they are full of lies and treachery. But
what you really mean.
Yeah, just be direct about that. But her book was blurbed by Laurie Moore, and she called her a lively and fearless new writer. And it's really accurate. The stories are, they all center around these female protagonists, and they are working through different issues, sexuality, identity, faith, personal trauma. And one of my favorite stories is actually one called It Sounds Like You're Feeling, which is about a young woman who is working at a crisis center hotline. And basically she's supposed to function as an intermediary between people who call, who are looking for their social workers, their caseworkers. And her job basically is to mollify them and to just keep them from annoying their caseworkers. So she has to follow this script in which she just basically talks to them and identifies their feeling. It sounds like you're feeling frustrated. And then says, go take a warm bath, maybe. And so she sort of is getting increasingly frustrated because she has to stay on script the entire time. And it also coincides with this other storyline of her going to a therapist who is blind, and she's fascinated by his blindness, and she wants to ask him this question, and it's like, ask him what it's like to be blind, what do you see? But it's sort of transgressive. And so the story is kind of about the ways in which we are all on script if we take on prescribed rules. Like, she wants to get to know her therapist as a person, but she can't because he's her therapist and she's the patient. And so it's the same way with her speaking to these people. And finally, what happens at the crisis center is when she confronts a problem and the person's just getting so frustrated with her on the other end of the phone, and she actually gives the person real advice and goes off script, which infuriates her superiors. But it's the first time she connects with someone and the person is just like, thank you. I just needed a solution to my problem. I did not, you know, I'm so tired of being told to take a warm bath
right.
over and over
they
again.
They don't want these rote kind of responses.
So it's this wonderful story about relating and engaging to people in an active and real, genuine way beyond just sort of prescribed roles. And I thought that it's a wonderful collection of stories.
Well, it sounds like a good find, one that is not perhaps getting as much attention as the trilogy you mentioned earlier, but
right.
it's worth looking up. Now, you also you recommended to me a book that maybe we can talk about that I thought was very good. Which you had a blog mm-hmm. where you noted some of these books, which is this Tana French. Is that how you pronounce
yes,
her name?
Yes, Tana.
Faithful Place, which I guess is the in a trilogy.
It's the third in a series. It's actually the main character in that book. I'm totally blanking on his name.
I am too. So you can just
well,
say the
we
main
are
character.
Not. Guys, Google it. it's so helpful. But yeah, he is actually, I think, just peripheral in the second book. And then he comes up and sort of has his own story in the third book. But it's the first two books follow a different series of investigators because I believe he is a former cop and then or retired or.
In the third book, he's an undercover, but he's sort of in basically doing office work. It's not in the field.
Right, right, right.
But I would thank you for that recommendation. I thought it was excellent.
It's been talked about. I mean, she is just, everyone just raves about her books and raves about that series.
Well, it's a mystery, but I would say things that make it different are, one, the voice. I mean, I think it's as much, even, you know, I've read a fair amount of Irish literature. It still is, I think, because it's coming out of contemporary Ireland. So you're seeing different than the kind of traditional nostalgic portrait of that country, you know, a country that is kind of on the precipice of economic misfortune, which obviously has happened since. Also, you know, obviously the church is not as doesn't play as big of a role as sometimes in other books that come from Ireland. I'd say that's perhaps what distinguishes it. Also, just her writing. I mean, her writing is really fresh and, you know, no cliches. When you're writing in this genre, I would say that would probably be very difficult, avoiding, you know, just kind of the same kind of tropes.
If you're writing a mystery
exactly.
thriller, yeah.
Exactly. So I would recommend it, and I have In the Woods is next on my list. That's another one in the series. And
that the first one, or are you working backwards?
You know, I don't. Somebody just loaned it to me, so I'm just going to read it. So I think that might be the second. It might be the first one, actually.
Okay.
The Likeness, I think, is the other one.
Mm.
But I would highly recommend those books. So I think that's a good find, and was briefly on the bestseller list, so it was getting some attention, but I think it's dropped off of that list. So what else would you recommend, Nina?
Well, we actually had some reader suggestions. One of our readers, Michelle Frankel-Donne, I hope I pronounced that correctly.
This is from the blog.
This is from the blog. They responded. She blogs at quantumtheology.blogspot.com.
Oh,
I thought I'd offer her plug
there.
Right there. She recommended two books about silence, silent meditation and prayer. One is Into the Silent Land by Martin Laird, and she says it's, quote, a pithy and wonderfully frank book about deepening a practice of Christian contemplation.
Oh, okay.
And also she recommended A Book of Silence by Sarah Maitland.
When we post this podcast, we will put links to some of these books, so you can check them out there.
And she also recommended one that I wanted to mention because it's called The God of the Hive by Laurie King, and it's about Sherlock Holmes. It's a Sherlock Holmes sequel,
oh.
and I'm a huge Sherlock Holmes fan. Although in this one, he's married.
Have you read this one?
I have not read this one. I don't read a lot of the sequels. I mean, to be honest, Michelle had commented that some of these stories are better than the originals, which I kind of agree with sometimes. So, but I just thought this is a great suggestion because I'm such a nerd for Sherlock Holmes.
I've
seen all the Grenada television series, the new movie, everything. I've seen it.
Well, you're not alone, and it's, you know, frankly, I did not know that there were books continuing to be written about this series, but it obviously that people out there
there's a demand.
They're still mining it for more.
Yeah, I mean, if in 2010 2010 we're still seeing movies with, you know, Robert Downey Jr., I think they're still a demand out there for it.
Well, why don't we transition, since we're at the end of summer here, perhaps we could talk about, and obviously, you know, we're a magazine plans ahead, so we're already involved in kind of getting our fall books ready. So what's coming out this fall?
Well, the big fall book that everyone is talking about that's actually coming out August 31st is Freedom by Jonathan Franzen. Jonathan Franzen is now, he's all of a sudden just become like this literary superstar. I mean, he's written many books, but this is like the huge one. He just made the cover of Time magazine. Vogue just did a feature profile on him. It's just sort of exploded. It's a novel about this couple in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it's not just about the disintegration of their family, but about their individual personal flaws. It sort of starts out, well, it gives, it's, I've heard the first 30 pages sort of outlines how, where they are now a little bit, and then goes into how they got to where they are and sort of how they started from these, you know, I guess, innocent beginnings and how they've gone astray and the moral compromises they've had to make. And I think it's about mostly adult freedom and sort of the concept of what freedom means and how sometimes it can lead us to make moral compromises. For instance, I think the main character, who was once, quote, greener than Greenpeace, gets wrapped up with some Bush Cheney cronies and his business with the coal industry. So there are a lot of moral compromises that they're facing. And the advance buzz is that Franzen has this way of sort of lighting upon characters' flaws and exposing the tragedy of it, but doing it in a really humane and sensitive way. Michiko Kakutani was raving about this, and I was raving about his book, and which is very gracious of her, considering he once called her the stupidest person in New York City after she gave his memoir a bad review. But I mean, everyone is just saying this book is totally lived up to the reputation here and with the corrections, so it's going to be huge.
Obviously, I haven't read it. A good friend of mine has read it and is a kind of a critical reader and loved it. So I would say that with a title like Freedom, you're really setting the bar pretty high, because it's like, you know, I haven't written a book in 10 years, or a novel in almost 10 years. The Corrections was the last one, 2001. And you're going to call it Freedom. You're setting the bar.
It sounds like he actually made it, because the Time subhead, it was, first of all, Great American Novelist was the cover of Time. And it says underneath, Jonathan Franzen writes about the way we live now. So, you can't ask for a better endorsement than that.
Now, can we look forward to a review in America of Freedom?
I think so, yeah. I think we've got that out.
Well, I did get some feedback that, if you're writing about St. Paul, Minnesota, that's a very Catholic town. So I think there's going to be some, what I've heard is that there is some coverage of a little bit about Catholic life there. So we'll see what he does with that. What else do we have for the fall?
There's By Nightfall by Michael Cunningham, who wrote The Hours. He, this one is about an art dealer who finds he's drawn to his wife's younger brother. And it's very complicated, because it's not an issue of this character being gay as much as it is this character being reminded of his wife as younger. And it's this very complex emotional drama. So we're looking forward to that one. Another one is The Elephant's Journey by Jose Saramago.
He
passed away recently. And this is just about, it's a tracing the travels of Solomon, an Indian elephant given by King John III to Archduke Maximilian of Austria.
Oh, okay. Well, a historical novel, it sounds like. All right. When are those books coming out?
Those are all coming out in September, although, like I said, The Franzen, I think, is coming out in just a couple of weeks, August 31st.
Just a couple weeks, okay. Yeah.
So for October, Nemesis by Philip Roth is the big thing.
Okay, well, of course, it seems like every year we have another book.
I know. We're all hoping that this one is better than the last one. The Humbling was his last book, and I remember the book blog gossip being that he would be awarded the worst love scene award. It was between, you know, and Philip Roth is a gentleman in his, let's say, his 70s. And he was writing about this older man and this younger woman, and they're having a menage.
He's done this before.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yeah, of course. Why not? And they're having a menage a trois with this other girl. And it's just the worst thing you could possibly. It's just embarrassing. It was embarrassing. But this one we've heard, it's a little different. We're going to shift. It's about a polio epidemic during World War II.
Oh.
So hopefully this is more his,
right, sort of more his wheelhouse. Yes, more his forte there.
So it's about a 23-year-old playground director who sees polio ravaging the children that he works with. And apparently it's been in the works since at least early 2009.
Okay.
So it's highly anticipated, the next Philip Roth, as they all are.
And it seems like a different tack or a different approach from him. He doesn't tend to write about these.
No, it's not about an older writer contemplating his problems. So it
or having
seems
an affair
a
with younger women.
Right, exactly.
Right, exactly. Well, we're going to wrap up here in a few minutes, but maybe you could highlight a couple more for the fall that worth reading, but also, you know, might be on the agenda for America's Review.
Well, actually, one that's coming up for our fall books issue is Travels in Siberia by Ian Fraser.
It's by the New Yorker writer, right?
Right, right, right. He had a very expansive two-part travelogue of his trip across Siberia, if you read it in the New Yorker. That was just a smaller part of his, it's like 544 pages, this book about Siberia, and he travels with these two guides, and he insists on traveling by car. So there are some comic moments that come up as a result of that. And just the moment in history when his trip takes place, because he arrives at the Pacific on September 11th, 2001.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that part of
yeah,
the story.
I mean, it's got a place in history. Another one that I'm personally excited about is The Great House by Nicole Krauss. She is one of the New Yorker's 20 Under 40. Their famous list that just
oh okay
just
yes
came out.
Yes
and her one of her short stories The Young Painters was in that issue, the June 28th 2010 issue, if you guys want to read it. She's a very promising young author, and this novel is about a desk that contains the secrets and becomes the obsession of the lives it passes through. So it's sort of like this object that surrounds all these people's lives.
Okay.
And pass through it. Yeah, I mean, and the other one that I'm kind of interested in, it's another New Yorker, 20 under 40, but she is very significant, Taya Obrecht. She is the most significant because she is 25. She is the youngest person on the New Yorker.
She's the one who's going to instill the most amount of jealousy out there.
Yes.
Among young writers.
In this room. The Tiger's Wife is the name of her novel. It's her debut. The New Yorker sort of previewed it last year. I think it might have been December of last year. And it's about this young doctor, Natalia, who is on this mission of mercy to an orphanage. And she hears about her grandfather dying, her grandfather's death. And he had traveled to he's like this deeply rational person. But he ended up searching for this, quote, deathless man, like this immortal, this vagabond who claimed to be immortal. And she's like, well, my grandfather was such a rational person. What could have led him to do this in his right before he died? So she is sort of going off on that journey, and she stumbles across something that leads her to the story of the Tiger's Wife. So that's something that I'm very excited about, to see a young female writer out there getting that kind of recognition. I will temper my jealousy, and I will read the book and be supportive of it.
Well, maybe Regina will ask you to kind of round up some of these more on the blog, so that you can, for people who are interested, can put up some links, etc. But it sounds like another theme of the fall is these younger writers, and I should say that I'm reading right now one of those. I'm going to mispronounce his name. Steingart, is that how it's said? The real super sad, super true love
Is
story.
Is it Scheitengart?
Scheitengart. Okay, I'm sure you're probably right.
I hope so.
Well, sorry, Gary.
I'm sure he's very worried about
yeah,
us.
Exactly. But I would recommend it. He wrote Absurdistan, and also, I'm forgetting the earlier one, but again, a totally original voice. This is kind of a dystopian look at New York, I'd say 50 years from now. As I said, it's a dystopian look at the country and the wrong turns we've taken. But at its heart is this love story between this, you know, kind of homely man who reminds me, I should say, in many ways of, I think he's been influenced by John Kennedy O'Toole and Ignatius Riley. If you've read the Confederacy of Dunces, I think there's a lot of similarities there. His relationship with a younger woman. So I would recommend that book as well. As I said, we'll get Regina to round some of these up and to, you know, hopefully throughout the fall to keep blogging about these.
Oh, yeah, I would love to do that.
Well, Regina, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
I want to thank you for joining us for the American Magazine podcast. And just one minor correction, I was referring to John Kennedy Toole, the author of Confederacy of Dunces. Look online this week. We have videos conducted by Mary Ann Kuzmana Love with the president of the Bishops' Conference from Sudan on the political situation in his country. We also have reviews of the film Eat, Pray, Love. I want to thank Bill McGarvey. He provides music for the show. You can learn more about him at BillMcGarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.